Ray Wong is perhaps best known as an analyst often heard in the media and for his book Disrupting Digital Business, in which he shows how digital adoption has been a key driver of business success, and late to the game or not even showing up with a digital strategy has led to business downfall. As an analyst at Constellation Research, he does a lot of speaking at conferences, and we captured this interview with him, bumping into him in the halls during Nutanix.next. This was obviously pre-COVID. Even though his emphasis has been that technology innovation does not really have the starring role in business success, he says it's the business models that technology enables, which we need to pay attention to, I wanted to pick his brain about technology. So I started by asking him about the idea that workloads can live anywhere.
So we're in a world of what we call infinite ambient orchestration. We're taking processes and functions and decomposing them. And as we decompose them, we're basically getting down to headless microservices. Those headless microservices will be served up in a way that's smart in the background. And the ambient piece is the next best action. It's the recommendation on the back end based on context. And we're living in a world where it doesn't matter where anything lives, whether it's content, whether it's a process, those are orchestrated over time. And so what we are seeing is that, it can live anywhere, it can be operated from anywhere, it can act anywhere, but I need a single plane for orchestration. And when you have that single plane for orchestration, it gives us the ability to then have a level of control, a level of security, and a level of convenience that you probably wouldn't expect in a normal model, right? And I think that's the big shift. Now, as opposed to the other conversation point, which is what you were talking about, a nail in searching for a hammer, right? We are in that mist. And part of the problem is because we used to go from really large groups of families of products to horizontals to verticals, and now we're getting down to the feature level. And they're all commanding the same valuation, right? Because the markets are consolidating and we are maturing in a lot of different industries. It's kind of the same reason if you look at pharmaceuticals. 20 years ago, there might have been 40 pharma companies. We're down to like 10 that really matter. The people that left the pharmaceutical companies were the innovative people because they didn't want to be stuck in a large pharma. So they started a biotech company. So they were able to move from, molecule to market in less than $1 billion and get products out the door in 4 to 5 years on a clinical trial. That's pretty awesome, but they had no distribution. So what happened? Big Pharma bought all of them again. So the people who left biotech companies are now starting genomics companies, which is even much smaller than where we are today, right? So this is the same thing that's happening in every single industry. So we're in search of a problem, a feature, all across the board, something so small that someone might actually see some value and explode that value. And we're getting to smaller and smaller functions.
But is it going to be harder and harder for companies to control demand, to stoke demand, to create demand, rather than go find what a customer wants and solve their problem?
I'm actually going to say yes and no. So yes, in the short term, it's going to be harder to do this. No, in the long run, because we're going to build digital feedback loops. And these digital feedback loops take demand sensing, supply sensing, bring them together in these markets. We tell this to everybody. If you're a software company today and you're in the cloud and you sell software 10 years from now, you failed. You completely failed.
Why?
Because you should be brokering analytics and insights and next best actions. You should be selling recommendations. That software itself is creating feedback loops everywhere. I can tell what a feature was used, when it was used, why it was used. I can tell which feature was ignored. I can tell when people actually are about to get to a demand point. Right? So it's actually no in the long run, yes in the short run, because we can't instrument those fast enough.
I see. So this is what you mean by outcomes.
Let me give you a great example. Take Domino's Pizza, right? They basically won the digital transformation war. It was basically Domino's versus Pizza Hut, right? These two big brands, iconic brands, competing for the last 40 or 50 years. Well, you bought Domino's based on convenience. You bought Pizza Hut based on taste. You hope one of them showed up on time. You hope the other one tasted good, right? That was kind of the model, right? So they basically did digital transformation better than anyone else. And we talked about that, right? And even though they succeeded in winning this battle in digital transformation, let's get down to reality. How often do you order pizza? Once a week? Once every 2 weeks?
Once a month.
Yeah. Once a month. You're down to once a month and ordering pizza, right? Now, let's take a food aggregator app, right? Like a Grubhub or an Uber Eats. How often would you use that? Maybe 3 times a week?
Yeah,
5 times a week? Right? So what just happened here? A company that doesn't even have a restaurant, that doesn't even have a delivery service in terms of their trucking or anything, they've aggregated your order and now has better mind share than Domino's, which won the digital transformation battle. Domino's, which has the complete infrastructure to do this, can't compete until they start selling other people's products or they create a ghost kitchen. So you take a food aggregator plus a ghost kitchen, what happens? Right now I own the whole market because I own the order. It's the same thing that's happening in almost every single marketplace. That's the shift that we're talking about.
Let's switch to something else here, the data center becoming invisible.
I love the invisible analogy for the main reason, the fact that it's about the convenience, the ease of use, not even having to worry about it. Invisible to me translates to peace of mind. However, I want people to also appreciate the fact that it's really hard to make something invisible, right? And so those two things have to go in hand. But what it does mean is that instead of spending all my time and all my resources trying to, you know, drive down the cost, meet regulatory requirements, address technical debt, I now have an opportunity to take that spend to transform an organization, build new business models, and think about new profit pools.
Dive a little deeper into that. How is that going to happen?
So simple. There's an article I wrote sometime back in Harvard Business Review. It's about flip the pyramid to jumpstart growth. Remember Maslow's hierarchy of needs? It's pretty wild, right? So keep me safe, keep me sheltered, worry about my ego. That was like kind of the pyramid, right? Basic, you know, Maslow's hierarchy. There's a business version that we put out. The business version is regulatory compliance on the bottom. You know, don't get me sued, don't get me fired, don't kill anybody, right? Operational efficiency, for every dollar invest, I'm going to save you two or three. Next level up is revenue growth. For every dollar invest, I'm going to make you four or five. Next level up, strategic differentiation, right? What's the business model? What shifts are we making? And the top one is brand. If your company was a person, what would they be like? What kind of personality? Where do they fit, right? That is the pyramid. Unfortunately, we spend all our time on operational efficiency and regulatory compliance. The markets could be so bad, there's always money for regulatory compliance, right, and operational efficiency, right? Unfortunately, why? Well, if you're spending all your time doing this boring stuff, this mundane stuff that should be automated, you have no time to focus on the brand. If you want to succeed, you have to flip the pyramid. Put your best people on brand. What is your mission? What is your purpose? Why do you exist? Then build the right business models to support that brand. Then figure out the profit pools and revenue generation mechanism. Once you have that revenue generation mechanism, then we can start figuring out how to automate all the crap on the bottom. That stuff should be automated. That should be software. That should be autonomous. There should be no one working on the back of operational efficiency and regulatory compliance, right? But the problem is all our resources are there right now. And if you want to jumpstart growth, you must flip the pyramid.
What does this mean to you, the idea that the data center can be operated with just half a rack? What does that mean to you?
It's a lot more space in an air-conditioned environment. Okay, no, serious level, right? Yeah, but look, if I can operate on half a rack, think about all the other stuff I could do. Right, I mean, it's talking about, you know, energy savings. It's talking about pure efficiency of operations and management. It's talking about the fact less things to go wrong. Right, it means I can run a DR and backup somewhere else as well in different regions for half that cost or even a quarter of that cost. So I think that's really important.
Where does hardware go? Does it become even further commoditized, cheaper, more agnostic?
I think there are three components. I think the first one is it definitely becomes much more autonomous, right? So we're not going to be able to see it. It's the self-driving, self-healing pieces that people are talking about. I think the second piece is it's going to be super decentralized because we're going to be able to build decentralized models so we can pool those resources. Kind of like today what we're seeing about power grids, right? Power grids are all centralized production. When we get to solar panels and EV networks, what happens is they're decentralized power consumption. So compute power is the same. Kilowatt per hours are going to be decentralized, which changes the way you look that. But then I think the third part is really important is really how we think about the governance and the orchestration of that quality of service. We're going to build marketplaces against that quality of service, and those marketplaces are the ones that are going to change the way we view how compute power is consumed and sold.
Ray has worked in various tech company settings in many capacities, managing products, doing marketing, and finance. I asked him where the impetus came to channel that experience into becoming an analyst.
A lot of it actually came from curiosity. So I've always been interested in technology. I've also interested in business and trying to understand how those two things come together. It's been a long journey, right? Yeah. Because those things are orthogonal in many ways. And a lot of times what happens is you see parts of it, you don't see the whole picture.
Well, tell us how you get to see the whole picture.
How
does that work?
It actually started by understanding business processes. I actually, long back, was a SAP FICO consultant and learned how to do all the accounting and the finance processes, right? Over time, I picked up other areas from supply chain to customer experience to understanding, you know, procurement and all those things. Like, you get smaller and smaller insights of how companies work. And so once you understand how business processes work, then you can figure out where do you make changes, where do you automate them, where do you apply technologies to get to the level of improvement. You start figuring out what insights you need. Then you start getting really good at asking questions, right? What are the business questions that make sense? And normally most people ask questions in the areas where they think they know they have the answers. And the people that are really good at what they do ask questions where there are no answers to it, because their job is to figure out what those answers are. And it goes back to something long time ago someone said to me. It's like, you don't judge a person by their answers. You judge a person by the type of questions they ask. And those questions then tell you how well they know something or understand something or what they don't know. And it's a very, very powerful way to think about, you know, what you need to do in business and, of course, understand how the technologies impact your business.
And just for the fun of it, we asked him to go down a rabbit hole. If there's one thing he wished everyone knew, what would it be?
Let's go a little geeky. Let's go 40 years back, right? So what is cloud? It is mainframe time sharing from 40 years ago, right? What is a mobile device? It's basically VT100. This is like a dumb terminal. It's a little bit smarter, fine. We'll give it some credit, right? What is key value pairs and NoSQL? Same thing, right, from 40 years ago. The only thing missing right now is TCP/IP, right? TCP/IP is the thing that we had was token ring. Right? So Token Ring may come back in 40 years. No, I'm just kidding. If you want to go back that far. All right. But on seriously, it's like I think in the IT world, what we really have to understand is that the level of autonomous applications, autonomous infrastructure, autonomous environments is going to finally give us an ability to actually pay down some of that legacy technical debt. And I think there's hope there. And I think every CIO, there's four personas of a CIO that we look at: a chief infrastructure officer, a chief integration officer, a chief intelligence officer, and a chief innovation officer. The infrastructure officer and the integration officer, that role where almost 100% of your IT budget is dedicated to, we're going to actually chip away at that to finally free up some money to do innovation and intelligence.
Okay, it's just a fun question for you. Not that these other ones weren't fun, but if you were put in charge of a lab, an innovation lab, it was guaranteed to be successful on the project that it was given, what would that project be?
I actually want to figure out how we get from where we are today to where the Star Trek economy ended up, where we don't work for money, and we actually figure out how we can get to an area where we work for innovation and ideas. So that would be the first area I'd actually look at. So
let's pull it back a little bit.
How far did you want to go?
Let's pull it back a little bit. So an innovation like next year or in 2 years?
All right. Okay. So I would look at decentralized power production, right? And part of the reason is we should make energy as free as possible, as clean as possible, and as available as possible, and find ways to store it. It's all available. It's out there. We're just not taking advantage of that. Once you do that, you can free up economies. You can give people tremendous opportunities for growth. And of course, we're going to need all that energy for all the compute power we're going to consume.
Now, how does that work?
How does it work?
It starts. I know I just said you have a lab and they're going to figure this out.
No, I don't know. I'm looking for funding at the moment. So if anyone's got like $100 million, I'm in. I'll tell you the secret. Call me. Here's my number. I don't know. Actually, well, I mean, there are a couple factors that are here, right? One factor is we've got to figure out storage, right? The storage apparatus is missing, low-cost storage, driving down the cost of lithium-ion batteries. I mean, it's not an area I normally cover, right? But if we can drive down the cost of storage to bio batteries, less rare earth materials that are going into the battery power, we now have an opportunity to create a storage mechanism that will balance out the loads. This whole stuff around green energy is crock, right? There's no way we can do this because we have a storage apparatus and we have a demand problem. So you're not going to make that work, right, unless you have enough significant powers. You want to put all our eco-energy in, you've got to have storage, right? So we got to solve the storage problem first. The second part is we got to create marketplaces which actually allow you to, every producer is a seller, every seller is a producer, right? So we got to figure out how to get the ability to self-generation on a solar panel, get the solar panels up so that people can then actually use these and then reuse these and then sell them to someone else. And that's not an easy part of the equation. And the third part of the equation is we got to make sure that the people that are still running the infrastructure get paid, right? You still need transmission, distribution, right? That's very, very hard. So power gen we get, consumption we get, transmission someone's got to pay for in a fair way so that, you know, people can maintain the lines and maintain the backups that are around that, right? But to support the green energy requirements everyone's like talking about, you can't do that unless you have storage in place. And we don't have the storage to manage manage the peaks and valleys.
Ray Wong is principal analyst, founder, and chairman of Constellation Research. His new book, Digital Giants, is slated for release next year. This is the Tech Barometer Podcast. I'm Jason Lopez. Thanks for listening. For more stories about technology and the people in tech, check us out at The Forecast by Nutanix.com.